Wonderful opportunity to rest in stillness in the present moment and observe that impermanent nature of things. So tonight's talk is on the three characteristics of existence. And I will also have a few words on insight meditation. But so far, we have covered in this core teachings of the Buddha, the life of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths, and the Eightfold Path, the refuges and the precepts, and the four foundations of mindfulness. And that brings us here now. And that's a lot. And we mentioned at one point, perhaps feeling a little overwhelmed at times with all the information. But do remember that they all support each other and they are all kind of a little repetitious. And we could use the reminder and perhaps tying some ends up and together with the teaching tonight. At any rate, please be gentle with yourselves. You made it here tonight, and that's a wonderful thing. This whole path is a marathon. It is not a sprint. And it's a path we follow, not a quick fix. So I did want to begin by speaking about insight meditation. This is our tradition, and Vipassana is the Pali word that we translate in English as insight. And we used to be called Vipassana Santa Cruz, but changed that name almost 10 years ago, I think, because we wanted to be more accessible to people. We wanted people to read an English word and feel a little more connected and like this was a place that they wanted to come. Just like the Buddha, we want these teachings accessible to all. And this insight meditation is a path of discovery and a path that we are all on, a path toward freedom by focusing honestly and directly on our suffering. That we learned in the First Noble Truth. And our suffering that is caused by our grasping or clinging, that's the Second Noble Truth. And the peace or the happiness that results from the release of grasping, that's the Eightfold Path. And the way of living that supports a sense of well-being. And that is our ethics or our precepts. Clearly seeing the nature of reality. That's our first step on the path. Wise view. None of this is easily communicated from one person to another. It must be experienced for oneself. So you hear the teachings and you go out and try them on for yourself. Profound insights come with practice and are available when working with the three characteristics. Direct experience with these three characteristics is what leads to progress along this path. The three are impermanence, suffering, and not self. It becomes a challenging teaching because the mind automatically or by default buys into their opposites, solidity, satisfaction, and identity or a big ego. Impermanence or anicca in the Pali is the simplest of the three to observe, so best to start here. Everything is in process, unstable and unreliable. Our duty with this teaching is to see impermanence clearly. And it's readily available to us. It's everywhere. In our formal practice and out in the world. The more we experience impermanence, familiarize ourselves with its ever-changing nature, the more we can let go of our infatuation with things, that clinging. Because when we imagine things lasting forever, we become heartbroken when they disappear or stop. Everything that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to pass away. This is practiced easily when watching the breath or body sensations or sounds, but not just on the meditation cushion. Even by simply watching the beginnings and the endings throughout our days, like the sunrise or that morning cup of coffee. I always want another one. It is such a treat in my morning, but I remind myself to just sit here and enjoy the one that I have. I can't be drinking coffee all day. Perhaps a Zoom meeting with a friend, or the different postures we go in and out of during the day. Impermanence, or anicca, is always unfolding. I'm kind of embarrassed to realize how long I lived without this being common knowledge to me. And when I first heard it, I'll tell you, in my 50s, I really was skeptical. I decided I would have to go and see for myself. And so I have been trying that one on for myself. And so far, I have not found anything that lasts forever. What I love about awareness of impermanence is how precious it makes everything. I'm so much more appreciative of the smallest things, like the six-month-old that was born in COVID-19 a couple houses down. It's just so much fun to watch her grow up. She's eating real food now and wears it on her face and is just delighted by the flavors. I love seeing couples holding hands, and I can't forget my mom as with dementia in a nursing home, but just loving to see a little toddler walk by in front of her, just so joyful. And also for the unpleasant things, when I know that they're impermanent, I can kind of gather my wits about them and probably make better decisions than I would if I were caught up in all the drama. It has been good to acknowledge my own impermanence, making the conscious decision to live each day as if it were worthy of my last, making each day count. So that's impermanence. It's everywhere. On to suffering or unsatisfactoriness, dukkha in the Pali. It is the first of the four noble truths, and our duty is to see it clearly, the craving and the clinging. It was actually a relief for me to hear that there was suffering in life, just to take that for granted. That's what's life will have that, because I had suffered in my life and I thought it was me or something I was doing, but it was relieving to understand that I will have this. I will have this and I will have the joys in life. Nothing is worth clinging to. because everything has a shelf life, is unstable, unreliable, impermanent, the pleasant and the unpleasant. It's futile to try to possess anything. Resisting the natural flow is useless and will cause suffering. Let go or be dragged. Observing and becoming familiar with suffering in formal practice by watching the shifting of our postures, realizing that we are almost always shifting postures to alleviate suffering of some kind. Practicing sitting with the little discomforts and watch them move and change and disappear all on their own, without our even having to do anything about them. And of course, being gentle with yourself, obviously, getting medical treatment when necessary. In daily life, watching the sensation of a pleasant experience arise and the dukkha that follows when the event ends, and perhaps deciding ahead of time, you know it will not last forever, and so just enjoying it while it's there. This works with the unpleasant too. Just knowing that they're not going to be around forever kind of helps relieve some charge about the unpleasant, where we don't have to try so hard to push it away, and perhaps even come up with a reasonable resolution by thinking a little more clearly. Nothing whatsoever is permanently satisfying. Just this clear seeing of impermanence and suffering can be liberating. Here we see how much the teaching of anicca helps us with dukkha. Perhaps we can manage anything that we know will not last forever. And it's always helpful to remember that out of the mud grows the lotus. No mud, no lotus. And there is almost always something pleasant tucked within the unpleasant somewhere. And that brings us to not self. Not self, no fixed self, anatta in the Pali. The most difficult for us to wrap our heads around, because our culture asks us to create and define ourselves from an early age. We seek uniqueness and individuality and the privileges that go along with that, like a good job and a happy family life and quality relationships. But let's take another look at impermanence for a second. There is no one in control of the arising and the passing away of objects. It's just the natural order of things. And looking at suffering or dukkha, attachment or clinging to anything, including our identity, causes suffering. And like all phenomena, we too are in process, unreliable, unstable, nothing to hold on to. What is most important to remember while trying to comprehend not self is that by believing in a fixed or a reliable self, we suffer. I got a tiny taste of the liberating quality of loosening my grip around a tightly held belief I had about being a fiercely independent woman. And I want to share it with you, this little insight I had. I grew up to be an independent woman, and I was taking good care of myself. I had a child and raised her all by myself. And at the age of 49, moved from Massachusetts to California, just my daughter and I. We didn't know anybody. Very brave and independent, courageous. And then as soon as I got here, I met my husband now, who I was not looking for, but it was a wonderful thing. And we got married and have a happy marriage. And one night I was in the kitchen, and we have a open kitchen, living room, dining area. I was making dinner and he was watching TV. And I realized I couldn't reach something up high and I needed it, and I could go get the stool and help myself, and I didn't want to bother him. But I did say, "Honey, can you come over here and reach that for me?" And he stopped watching TV and turned around slowly and said, "You need me?" And as soon as he said those words, it kind of clutched me in my core here. I felt a little contraction. And I kind of put my hands on my waist. I was about to say, "I don't need anybody. I'm an independent woman." But I caught myself and I softened and I saw how happy he was that I needed him. And I said, "Yeah, I need you." And he said, "It makes me so happy when you need me." And he came over and he happily got the spice I needed up high. And that was the start of a beautiful evening, but it could have been otherwise. Honestly, I could have really held on tightly to that belief and kind of been resentful for the rest of the night, or at least contracted. It's no fun to kind of tightly hold on to those things. And because I had that taste, it's kind of motivated me to look for some more ways in which I may be gripping onto whoever it is I think I am and softening. We tend to identify strongly with the thoughts that we have. And while some of them are brilliant, many of them are not even true. We tend to identify with the feelings we have and our personal characteristics. If we expend energy to cling to anything as the definition of self, we will sooner or later suffer. In order to find a deeply abiding peace, we need to learn to let go of any attachment to or habit of fixating on self-identity. I had another insight as I was working on not self once. This is kind of a favorite little topic of mine, not self. And I drew trying to wrap my head around it, I drew a stick figure of myself. And around the outside in pencil, I wrote all my little roles in life, all my big roles too, as many as I could fit around this stick figure, like sister and daughter and mother and counselor and meditator, volunteer, and on and on. Until I had words all around this stick figure. And as I looked at it, it looked to me a lot like chains around my being. And I thought a little bit and I decided to use my eraser on some of them and create some space around that. And it actually felt better. There was some constriction with the chains and it all sort of softened up a little as I erased. And I, at the same time, I kind of realized that, yeah, I'm a mother, but it was different when she was 2 years old than now when she's 34. And yes, I'm a daughter, but my parents are no longer living. So that's different now too. And sure, I'm a sibling, but all my siblings are back in Massachusetts. So my role there has changed too. Beginning to get a little understanding of a self that is always changing. It's not fixed. In fact, I'm not the same person I was a year ago. I'm not the same person I was a week ago or yesterday. Held tightly, or held lightly, identifications can be useful, but held tightly, they are self-limiting. The fringe benefit of the practice of no self is, or of not self, it's sometimes called no self too, but not self just works better for me, is that we soften the, one of those fringe benefits is that we soften the outside edges of ourselves, like when we erase, make little erasure marks, and we begin to dissolve the distance between me and you. Begin to understand there really is no separation. That's a whole nother teaching. When asked directly, the Buddha never actually said in any of the teachings there was no self. Instead, he did say that the identification with a permanent and a fixed self leads to suffering. And he was all about leading us away from suffering. So he pointed out that seeing the self as more fluid leads to freedom. In the Anatta Lacuna Sutta, the Discourse on Not Self, he did say that in order for there to be a reliable self, it needed three components. A self needed to have complete control over the body, feelings, thoughts, impulses, intentions, consciousness, and perceptions. It had to be permanent, and it had to be blissful. So what is meant by this is that if there was a self, it would have to have dominion over our moods, for example. Yet we cannot escape being happy one minute and gloomy the next. Sometimes our health will fail. We cannot control the thoughts that arise or guarantee anything on our agenda on any given day. The Buddha makes it clear that nothing in our experience of ourselves has these three qualities and is therefore not fit to be regarded as self. So before having any experience with these teachings, I wasn't sure what to make of not self. But by slowly hearing about not self again and again, by listening to different teachers, by trying it on a little bit at a time, and actually seeing myself, seeing not myself in it, I began to understand more and more. Seeing the discomfort arising when I grip and the ease created when I soften. I still don't have a clear understanding all the time, but the teaching is true that when my ego is showing, I'm in danger of hurting myself or others. This teaching helps me to see that what is in my control is steering away from habitual tendencies that no longer serve me. What we get to discover in our practice is what those habitual tendencies are. That's where I identified my strong independent streak. What I secretly love about not self is that there is no longer any reason to get my feelings hurt. If somebody doesn't like the meal I prepared or the movie I chose, it's not that I don't care anymore or don't take responsibility for my actions, but something about not self makes me less susceptible to getting my feelings hurt. There's a freedom in not being attached to those outcomes and not taking anything personally because I am not myself. It's a little like being carried by a river and not getting stuck or stopped anywhere. Of course, I do get stuck, but the option to get unstuck is always there. I can always let go. So that's a bit about impermanence and suffering and not self. And I wanted to wrap it up with a really concise little paragraph by Tanisaro Bhikkhu on this teaching. He says, "Insight into change teaches us to embrace our experiences without clinging to them, to get the most out of them in the present moment by fully appreciating their intensity, in full knowledge that we will soon have to let them go to embrace whatever comes next. Insight into change teaches us hope, because change is built into the nature of things. Nothing is inherently fixed, not even our own identity. No matter how bad the situation, anything is possible. We can do whatever we want to do, create whatever world we want to live in, and become whatever we want to be." So thank you for your kind attention. And let's just give ourselves a minute or two of silence to let those words sink in.